Welcome to another episode of Tennis Channel Inside In on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Mitch Michaels from the Santa Monica Studios. We're now 4 days into the French Open, almost completed day four. Joined now by our guest from the Expo Studio, calling matches. We've got a full house here, but we're lucky to have a first-time guest on this show. Top 40 player. You had 45 straight Grand Slam main draw appearances, and you're in the University of Florida Hall of Fame. It's Jill Kravis joining us. Jill, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you. That was a nice introduction. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, it's first-time guests. I bring out my best, so, you know, probably won't be as nice each time you join, No. But thank you again for joining, and I love, obviously, like, we all love this game of tennis, but there is something special about the first couple of days of a major where you have all these storylines, you have the biggest draws in tennis, and we kind of predicted it going in. Like, you'll have a major that starts 2 hours into the first day. Seeds are just flying left and right out of the draw.
Always so many good matches. You know, you see the qualifiers getting through, see how they're going to do with the lead up with the three matches under their belt. But I think any Grand Slam you play, there's always some great storylines because there's always someone that has a breakthrough or has a big win. So for me, that's what's so exciting about each Grand Slam. And also, you know, we're covering Roland Garros right now. For me, going to the clay, you see everyone trying to grind it out and play long points. So for me, it's really exciting.
Well, I think there's a couple different ways we can start with this. What I like to see and highlight the positives are those top players, men or women, that it doesn't all go according to plan. Like, you think you're just going to have this nice, easy run and it's going to be fine. That was the case for Carlos Alcaraz yesterday, who was in a dogfight, to say the least, with his countrymate Ramos Vinolas and had to save a match point to do it. I think it's great to be young in the sense that he can just kind of recover from what he went through. But he played a grueling match. He fought through it. The spin zone that I have is it's nice to know that he was able to win when plan A, when his A game wasn't quite there.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's just so impressive from so many aspects, not only his game, obviously his movement, his attitude for someone that's so young, only 19 years old, and the way he carries himself and handles himself out there. And I mean, huge credit, obviously, to his coach, Juan Carlos Ferrero. I think Ferrero, who has a huge impact on him, who brings that calmness and positive energy. But I think, you know, all of a sudden, Alcaraz goes and wins Miami, goes and wins Madrid, and then all of a sudden all this expectation on his shoulders. And so you all of us are talking about how we expect him to win Roland Garros. Well, it's not that easy, right? And so I think the fact that he got through that match, I think, can only help him going forward. Obviously, it was a grueling physical match. I think he has the physicality to recover quickly from that. And so I think it's good sometimes when you have those tough matches going forward. And Ramos Vinolas played incredible tennis. I mean, he deserved to get to the stage where he had a match point. It was just the hustle and the movement from Alcaraz is just spectacular.
It really is insane. And you bring up a point. You can say this for other players too, in the men's side, like Tsitsipas and Zverev, like when a draw opens up or when they get a favorable draw, we are assuming that they're going to make deep runs. And I think that's a product of us taking for granted what the big three, big four have done. Because it's not normal in tennis history.
It's not normal
to just make every single semifinal.
No, and I think all the players understand that. I mean, I think the more, you know, these up-and-coming new players that are going to be the next wave start to have opportunities to win slams or more opportunities to win slams, I think it kind of puts it into perspective even more what those three or four have accomplished. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. There are really no words for it. But, you know, I think some of them might be ready for them to make some room for some slam wins for some other players.
Well, I think upsets are good, too. We're going to start to see more when the best ever group is kind of getting ready for the latter stages and moving on. Nadal's looked great. I mean, no surprise winning his first two matches comfortably. But I think it's reasonable to just say we're just monitoring the health, the fitness, the level. We know he's got the game to win. He's won it 13 times. But it's good to see, at least this far, still a lot of tests left, that there hasn't been any setbacks health-wise. The foot's been good, and it's been business as usual so far.
Yeah, I mean, Nadal is amazing because, I mean, obviously you never rule him out. He's won this event 13 times, like you said. It's just crazy. But he's had to deal with this foot problem for years now. So he's understood how to manage his body over decades, and mm-hmm. he's one of the best at it. And with how physical of a game he plays, he's had to be able to do that. So even when there's an inkling that something, you know, might be bothering him or whatever, one, he's not the first to say that something's bothering him. And two, you know, he's just going to work his hardest and do the best that he can. I mean, that's what has been stood out from him for so many years.
It's funny because he's more frustrated, it seems, with not being able to practice. Like he wants,
right.
That's what frustrates him is this foot. I can get through the matches. He's, like you said, an honorable guy that will never use that as an excuse. But he said, like, I just can't practice like I used to. And that's what upsets me, which is, I guess, a coach's dream to hear stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, he loves tennis. Mm-hmm. He's got such a huge passion for the sport. So anytime he wants to get on the court, he wants to be there. And I mean, his warm-ups for matches for most players are like half an hour. His warm-ups are an hour long. I mean, he just likes having the repetition.
Yeah.
He just likes being out there. So I can see how that would be frustrating for him, but at least he gets to play.
That's true. It was that 2017 epic Australian Open with him and Federer. And there was a journalist, I forget who was talking about it like 2 hours before. Federer's like drinking like a coffee or something.
So like, relaxed. You
know, and Rafa's out there sweating buckets for an hour before. So, hey, there's no one way to be an all-time great tennis player. Speaking of those, Novak Djokovic is continuing on, and we started to see him ramp up. I think he's somebody more than maybe anyone that knows how to round into form at just the right time. He's another one that we won't be judging until he gets to the latter stages. But what I've saw, Jill, and I'm curious your perspective, the tennis is getting cleaner. When you go, like the Molcan match was a great example. He's got better levels of tennis to play, but the third set, not his best. He gets to a tiebreaker and he just locks it up. No errors. Dares the other player to finish him off. They can't do it. He's retrieving. I think Novak's clean tennis this far is the best sign that I've seen from him.
I mean, you pointed out something that I think over and over again in his matches is he knows how to just zone in at those big important moments, and all of a sudden he just does not make a mistake. And and just defensively forcing his players to come up with something good, like putting it on them to like, okay, you need to beat me now. And he's just one of the most solid players on the tour, one of the best movers. I mean, he's just absolutely incredible. So I mean, he does that from the beginning. And I mean, you say play into form. I mean, I think his expectation of himself is to have that perfect form from the beginning.
Right.
He just knows how to step it up.
Play into perfection.
Yeah,
like that's,
play into perfection.
He's obviously always really good. But to beat the best, he's got to get to a certain level that he's gotten to. And just how many times, like the tiebreaker against Federer at Wimbledon, like where he just doesn't make any mistakes out there.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah.
I think best of five is the other side of this too, because you saw Tsitsipas and Zverev both down two sets, both come back and win matches, and we'll get to both of them in detail. But there is something different about this best of five in terms of the mental side. Like we know the physical fitness, it's a war, it's Nadal, it's why he's been so great, Djokovic too. But there's something mentally when you're on the other side, I think, and you can obviously correct me here, but just the mental challenge of beating someone three sets versus two. Mm-hmm. Both of these matches, Zverev against Baez and Tsitsipas in his match against Musetti, I kind of felt watching like they had to do it in straight sets, because once that third set went the other way, that's when the momentum completely flipped and that's when it really changed. Like, do you buy into the mental side of it as well?
Oh, 100%. A lot of it is mental. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's mental in three sets, mm-hmm. but five sets for sure. I mean, those top players too. If you're playing a top player and you have an opportunity and it goes five sets, they just have been in that five set situation a little bit more often, mm-hmm. I think, which makes a big difference. It's so mental. I mean, a former coach of mine one time just had me play a practice match, play three out of five. Just to be able to have
tough practice.
Well, I mean, obviously the women only play two out of three, but to know what it felt like, and basically the point of it was to make me stronger mentally, because it's such a huge task to ask, especially, I think this is one of the most grueling five sets that you can play is on the clay, because the points are longer. It's just so physical. It's just like, I mean, if you have so many of these five set matches come down to just one point here or there. So you have to be so spot on, and you just have one slip, and that's where, that's where sometimes it can change.
Musetti, that's the second time. I mean, he was up on Djokovic two sets at Wimbledon, and you know, he's seen it a couple of times. Baez actually.
And here too, yeah. Wasn't he? In a
oh, was here. It wasn't Wimbledon. You're right. Yeah. It was last year here. Baez actually, I mean, and I love that kid's style and how he plays. He didn't get bullied around. Like that fifth set, he had a match point, didn't miss by much. But I agree. I think these, you know, tennis is such a mental game in general. You go point by point, find an opening. These players are such laser focused that I think it's been good to see that they still have that kind of commitment and that composure. Tsitsipas, though, I'm a little worried, and not because I know his elite level game and I love how he plays on the clay, but we saw it again today in his match where he just isn't, he kind of, I don't want to say zones out, but he's not bringing that level for a complete match. Court time is a little higher than I think it should be. And I worry about these little lulls that he has in matches. Because we saw it again today. That's not the second straight match where this has happened.
Well, my perspective is more, you're not going to play your best tennis all the time. I mean, it's just impossible. I would say I've talked to like some guys on the tour that have retired now who played for decades, like 18 to 20 years, and they can count on two hands how many times they played a match that they thought was perfect.
Right.
So it's about getting through tough situations. And even though maybe Tsitsipas isn't playing the cleanest matches that he wants right now, he's somehow finding a way to get through.
True.
And sometimes that is huge going into the second round. So he's still being able to perform well enough and be mentally tough enough to get through when he maybe isn't playing his best yet, which is big. Yeah.
I thought that it wasn't the best thing. This is just a sports take in general, that he was kind of expected now to make the final, that he was on the other side of the three favorites going into the tournament. Great opportunity, obviously, but it's like we're penciling him in. It's probably not the best to be like, oh, this guy's just going to be in the final. Not that he would listen to the outside news regardless. The other thing with the way he plays, everyone says it compares to Federer, how he's aggressive, he takes the ball on the rise. And I feel like maybe it's that style of play. There are more errors that I've noticed. He's kind of, I don't know if it's, and this is where you can chime in, but how much he plays, how aggressive he plays, the margins might not be very big. So when he's a little off, it looks maybe a little worse or maybe more drastic than other top players.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he could be also trying to make adjustments and find his form a little bit. I mean, it's hard to kind of speculate. You don't know what he's thinking. And obviously, he knows what it takes to get to a final here. He was in the final last year. So he could be making some adjustments for leading up into the next rounds or just maybe he hasn't felt comfortable coming into the tournament in general. So trying to find his form a little bit. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he performs now that he's got two matches under his belt. The beginning of a slam is always slightly nerve-wracking for everybody. His expectations are higher. Obviously, getting to the final here last year, got a lot of points to defend. Yeah. So there's a lot of factors that could be in play.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan. I think he's got it. He's been able to withhold some things and his style on clay is amazing. With Zverev too, it's funny. It's the serve. We're all just like worried. Like, is it going to happen again? You know.
I mean, yeah. I think he knows people is talking about the serve too. I mean, and I like especially on this surface, he's got such a great kick serve. And when he's struggling on that second serve, I think he can throw that in a little bit more often.
That match point he saved was a great serve.
Yeah.
You know, when he has it, that's where it's the Alcaraz final at Madrid. He was playing great, serving well, and then fell apart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. And obviously, it's something that he's continuously working on. I think he's got a great service motion as well. He just sometimes starts to think about it a little bit at some big moments. But I think he can use a little bit more spin, especially on this surface in particular, to create some opportunities.
Did you ever have any moments like that in your career or maybe better off? Did you ever go up against someone that was going through that?
I mean, at an Australian Open 1 year, I played an opponent that was, I mean, I somehow managed to lose the match, but had like 18 double faults and I knew it. And on your side, I mean, then you start, you know, I mean, I should have taken advantage of it, but she came up with some big serves as well. But yeah, it's tough. I think everyone goes through moments during their career.
Sabalenka is the one right now where it's just like, because everything that she does have, the weapons she has are incredible, but
amazing player. Yeah.
I thought during Australia, her overcoming that to get as far as she did was as impressive as anything.
I like that she's spoken about it though. I think if you try and deny that it's there, it probably just gets worse. So the fact that she's, you know, been openly outspoken about the fact that, okay, yeah, I'm struggling. This is something I need to work on. I, obviously, the first step is acceptance.
That's true. We got to start somewhere. Jill Crave is here on Tennis Channel Inside In, looking at the women's side now. Seven of the top 10 seeds are already out for round three. The one of them that's not is, no surprise, Iga Swiatek. 30 straight match wins, 4 games lost through 2 rounds, and the stat I saw today, 15 bagel sets in 2022. We're not in June yet.
I mean, that's unreal. Yeah, I mean, she's just on fire right now, and sometimes when you're playing that well and you have that much of a streak going, you kind of almost forget how to lose because you're playing with such confidence.
You forget when the changeovers are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're just playing with such freedom. Yeah. And obviously this new coaching partnership that she has is working extremely well. Just a different perspective, just a fresh perspective. So, I mean, yeah, she's looking unbelievable. And embracing the number one position, by the way. That's pretty impressive.
That's the part for me. Game-wise, we see that how athletic she is, how great that forehand is, how she constructs points. But going into each tournament, obviously for a major, you expect everyone to be here. But she wins a tournament. Yeah. She gets her trophy. She takes a photo shoot with it on the next day. And then she shows up 2 days later, and it's like, I got to prove it all over again.
Yeah.
It's so natural to see that letdown. And that we wouldn't be judging her any differently if she went into a tournament after winning 1, 2, 3 in a row and then had a bad or subpar performance. But the fact that she's backing it up every single time, her level is always there. It's very impressive.
Yeah, and she's being smart as well. You know, I mean, she's played so many matches in a row now, but being smart about when to rest, how to rest. She's learning from such a young age. She's got a great support team around her about when to take care of her body, when to not push it, taking days off from practice when she needs to. And so that's been impressive. But yeah, embracing the number one position, I mean, it's kind of just fell on her once the Ashleigh Barty, you know, came out and said that she was retiring from the sport. So the number one position sort of fell on her, and you're kind of, I'm like, okay, I want to see how she reacts to that. And she's just been impressive.
She said she's still got work to do. I can't see it, but I mean, she sees it. So
the top are always still wanting to get better too.
It's almost like we were talking today, like if someone does beat her, then that might be what really propels her to another level. I don't want to say like there's a lot to improve. She's not getting a ton of aces. So like, I think at her age, her serve can get better over time, which is another frightening thing, but no, her level's there. She idolizes Nadal and plays like him downhill. No room to breathe.
Not a bad one to emulate, right?
Yeah. No, Iga's going to be tough. I mean, she was a favorite coming into this tournament like Nadal at his heyday. So the draw, you know, not, you know, the pitfalls being out of the way. Iga's level is impressive. But who else, looking at just in general, who else has impressed you by what they've done so far?
In this tournament. Okay. Well, because I was gonna kind of go with, like, I love the way Badosa's last year has gone. Yeah. And I've, you know, she won today in 3 sets. So her.
Hey, she's still in it. I mean, of all the seeds that are gone.
Exactly. You know? So, I mean, it's not like she's like super dominating right now. I mean, she had an easy first round. Mm-hmm. But I love this surface for her. And I've heard numerous coaches say she's definitely going to be a future number one. And I agree with that after watching her play last year. I was at the, you know, WTA finals at the end of the year, super impressed with her. I also really like the way Anna Samova is playing right now.
It's a good one.
I think she's playing fantastic. She had a tough first round against Osaka. And then sometimes it's tough to, you know, back that up. Right. And she backed it up in impressive form against Vekic. Who else?
I just going to go off of that. I think it might be good in that situation to have a tougher match from the get-go because you don't have the luxury.
Well, that's what I was saying about Alcaraz, right? Like the fact that he was pushed.
Yeah, it's good.
I feel those challenges.
And she's a semifinalist here, so she knows how to play good clay court tennis and has found her game. And she's somebody that if you watch practice, like I saw her at the WTA event in Chicago with all the other top players, and she looks like the best practice player, the way she hits the ball. So I think that's a good one. And even we were talking about Sabalenka. I mean, she's into the third round, and if we're looking for contenders for Iga, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody with enough power. But that said, the other name I wanted to bring up was Belinda Bencic because she beats Andreescu in straight sets. And quietly, or maybe not quietly, is proving that she's doing well on the clay. I think she's had her best by far the last year has been the best year of her life on the clay, and I'm impressed with her serve. So she's another one I'm looking at to kind of see if she can make a move here.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think, I mean, the other, I'm just looking at the draw now. The other, I'm curious about Pagula.
Yeah, did you see the stats? Did you see the stats with Pagula? Two matches, 18 match points. She's won them both, but you know, it's taken 18 to close them out. And she's laughing about it on Twitter, saying it only took like nine today. But I do think that she's someone that's put the time in. It's just to physically pick someone to beat Iga, I'm going to have to see it first.
Yeah.
You know, to say that.
Well, the other matchup I was just going to say, it's a tough section of the draw, but the third round matchup against Keys and Rybakina. Mm. That's, I think Rybakina and Keys are both.
A lot of volatility there,
I
right?
I feel like they can, if they were not playing each other in the third round, I felt like both of them could have gone far in this tournament. So, I mean, but it is a tough section because the winner would play the winner of Bedosa and Kurnamatova, and then you got Sabalenka and Swiatek. Oh. There's too many choices.
Yeah, there seems to be. Some of the losses that we can kind of say shocking, maybe not shocking. Unfortunately, not shocking. Garbina Muguruza just doesn't have her top level right now. It's been a couple months that she's won back-to-back matches. But I will give credit to the trendy upset pick that happened. Kaia Kanepi is just what we call a dangerous floater.
Always.
And you can kind of relate because that's kind of where you lived in that area too.
That era. Yeah, thanks.
I said area.
Area. I lived way back when. Yeah.
But no, like you're on the fringe of being seated. You're capable of being top players. They probably don't want to see you. I could think of Muguruza being like, I have to play her first round when I'm trying to
definitely.
Find momentum.
Yes, definitely. I think everyone feels that way about Kanepi. I mean, she's been in the quarterfinals of every slam she's played. So, I mean, and she's always dangerous to be the top players just because she's such a clean, good ball striker, moves well, good athlete. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got all the tools. So, and when she's on, I mean, she hits big off the ground, so she can overpower a lot of players. And Muguruza, I mean, I actually rewatched that match because Muguruza was in control and I was kind of like, I don't know what, I want to know what happened because I didn't see it. So I watched the replay of it and it was just Kanepi just kept trusting herself. I mean, she was missing in the beginning, but she never backed down.
She's been there. Like that's,
She just keeps going after her shots. And that's when she gets dangerous because she'll just keep trusting herself.
I've heard firsthand multiple WTA players say, like, when asked that question, who's someone that's down on the rankings you don't want to see? Kanepi, and they say her name. Like, they,
I actually think there's quite a few.
Yeah. Oh, there are quite a few. And that shows you the depth of the game for sure. Speaking of which, Simona Halep lost today, which we know she's kind of rounding back into form, working with Mortoglu, like all this stuff. Zhang Chen Wen is legit. Like, I know you feel
she's
the same
talented.
Way.
She's talented.
19 years old, 6'1", serves big, a lot of pace. This could be a loss we look at years from now where we're like, it's not that surprising.
Well, I mean, I actually watched quite a bit of her in Australia. That was the first time I saw her play. And right away, I was impressed. And she actually played Halep there on the hard court and lost to Halep in the lead-up event to the Australian Open. And I was impressed. Like you said, big serve. That's one of her biggest weapons is the serve. And she just hits with a huge off the ground. And I think going into this match, it helped that she had played Halep already.
Yeah.
So it's not as intimidating playing a Grand Slam champion. You already got one under your belt. Okay, maybe she lost that match. But I think it helped her just feeling a little bit more settled going into today.
Halep wasn't herself physically, but I don't want to take anything away from what Zhang did today for sure. And then also, I mean, you know, you look at the top five, top six, seven seeds that went out. Ange Jabeur losing to Magdalena Nett, a veteran who's been around, but I don't know if it was fatigue, if it was playing a lot of tennis, or, I mean, it's, like we said, like, players have bad matches, less than their perfect self, and upsets happen in sports, so we can't be too surprised.
That's why you play the match, because it's a different day. You never know
I just thought Krejcikova, defending champ, and Anett Kontaveit, the top five seed, they both lose. Kontaveit to Ayla Tomjanovic, who's obviously a well-established, respected pro. But they haven't been on court too much. Mm. And I said this last year when Naomi Osaka was coming back, lost to Jill Teichman, who's gone on to have a run. But there's no replacement to playing tennis. Like, you kind of have to be out there playing your matches. And Barbara, defending champ, got to number two in the world. But without playing, it's hard to expect her to beat anyone.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, having that match play is so important. I think, you know, we as commentators express sometimes, you know, a qualifier can be a dangerous opponent because they have those three matches under their belt leading into a first round. And so those matches are important. And Krejcikova hadn't played a lot of tennis. So I felt, in coming in as defending champion, that's kind of a tough task not to feel 100% prepared to come into this event.
Couple more things with Jill Krabus before we wrap up here on Tennis Channel Inside In. Well, there are opportunities we mentioned with the bottom half of the draw on the women's side being open. From a personal question, did you ever look at the draw when you played?
No.
Never. Okay. So you're on that side. So that's the thing.
Like, I just read about someone who doesn't. Oh, Schwartzman. I just Schwartzman's match the other day.
Now,
there was an article. He was like, I never look at the draw. I refuse to look at the draw. But then he'll ask his coach all these questions like, is it tough? Is it really tough? Is it super tough?
Were you okay? So you never looked?
No, I didn't look. Never. I didn't like looking.
Okay.
So, obviously knew if I was in the top or bottom with what day I played.
Jan Michael Gamble said on the show a couple months ago, because he never looked either. Mm-mm. But then we got to the topic of like the top guys. So it's like, okay, they probably look. Because if you want to see if you're like at the
Well, Schwartzman doesn't. Yeah. I mean, he's been top 10.
Maybe if you had, like, do you think, the question being like, does Djokovic know that he has to play Nadal in the quarterfinals? I would venture to say yes. At that
That would be my guess, but
yeah, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, the bottom half is an open section, and you've got a lot of seeds gone. Jill Teichman, who I mentioned, could make a run. Coco Gauff is down there, maybe potentially. We didn't even mention Maria Sakkari lost. That opens things up completely. Last year's semifinalist, and Victoria Azarenka still going strong as well. So there are
a lot of good opportunities. Yeah,
I like with Coco Gauff. It's still hard to imagine her age, just 18 years old, but she's starting to kind of look like more of a weathered season pro, where she's able to grind out some victories. I think that could serve her well, and I just think that at this point in her career, having the experience and being an exceptional clay court player, she's lurking in that section of the draw.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, she plays Konecny next round.
That's so, wow. Yeah.
So we're just talking about who you don't want to face.
Know.
So that's tough. You mentioned Azarenka. I think Sloane Stephens also is at the bottom there, where Krejcikova had lost. She's a former finalist here, so she's always dangerous. Layla Fernandez, US Open finalist. I mean,
that's Layla Belinda next round. That's a good one to look for tomorrow.
It's crazy. Yeah. Mertens got a walkover, so she's. I mean, yeah, it's pretty open for a lot of players to make a push.
So there's been a couple different, you know, we'll kind of end on this, just moments in the tournament that have been good, some bad, some great storylines, the underdog winning, and then some not so great storylines today. We should address the Bagu-Alexandrova match. I don't know if you saw what it exactly happened.
I didn't see it. No, I didn't see what happened.
So Bagu was down 2-0 in the third set on an outer court, upset about something, slammed a racket down. It bounced up into the stands and got really close to a child who started crying. There was no DQ penalty, which is a code violation. Alexandrova didn't like that. Yada, yada, yada. Bagu wins the match. So I'll give credit to her in this regard. She apologized for everything, took full responsibility. Yeah. On the flip side, I mean, this is just unfortunately another event in this racket.
Did it actually hit someone?
No, there wasn't any confirmation that it hit somebody, but it got close to a pretty young kid. And she was, you know, cordial in how she, you know, picked him up and everything. The one side of it is like, it shouldn't happen. We got to get to a point where this stuff stops. And the other side is like, I feel for Alexandrova, but it did kind of unravel her completely, like up a break in the third set. So unfortunate that we still have to talk about these things, but we'd like to see players just kind of be more responsive. I mean, Rublev was the same way in his
match. Yeah, I saw that. I did see that. Yeah.
So I just think that something has to change. We can't have this go on where I don't think these players obviously don't want to hurt anybody, but got to be smarter with the rackets.
And you know, Rublev, I mean, just like you said, Bagu was cordial. Rublev came out and apologized right away as well. He said it was unprofessional and he hopes it never happens again. I mean, that's one of the things that's the toughest thing as a tennis player is to be able to control those emotions, but you have to, because
I'm not saying banish these people, but there should be some punishment going on here to curb some of this stuff.
What are you suggesting? Like a immediate disqualification or?
Well, I mean, there are certain things I think require an immediate disqualification. Yeah. But if it happens post-match, like we saw with certain players, then the suspension comes involved there.
Yeah.
It's just, it's unfortunate that these are the things that keep coming up. Especially when you have a good match, a three-set match there. But on the positive side, as we want to end on a good note here, there have been some wins that, you know, we gotta give just due to. The French player, Leolia Jean, number 227 in the world. She beats Pliskova.
Right.
This is her first Grand Slam. She's 26 years old. First Grand Slam debut.
That's awesome.
Was a prodigy.
26. I think that's awesome.
So doing research on her, was a former prodigy. Didn't really pan out in the prodigy sense. Has an MBA from a French college. And now is giving tennis a serious go. And she's in the third round.
I love it. Those are the great stories. Yeah. I mean, that's great. And she's... I mean, look, she's the type of player that not only has a good story, but has a good couple wins. Pliskova, I mean, she got first win under her belt as a wild card and then has to play Pliskova and does a good job of backing up that first win. I mean, that's incredible.
I mean, taking advantage. I know wild card's a tense topic these days, but taking advantage of it for sure. And the other French player that stood out was Diane Perry, who's into the third round as well. Gets Sloane Stephens, but gets the home crowd going. And then, of course, we got to pay tribute to Joe Wilfred Tsonga.
Yeah.
Heck of a career.
I almost started crying when,
when
he was match point down, and then, oh, my God.
Some will say, like, oh, the era he was in, and it's true. Like, it affected his ability to win because the top guys were the best top guys ever. But I keep going back to a David Ferrer quote that he said when he retired. Those guys made me a better player.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's true. It's unfortunate. Like, we would all like to see him win. He got the Rogers Cup beating those guys in 2014. But I definitely think they brought out the best in him. And he was game. He was tough. And was with Gael Monfils, with Simone and Gasquet. Simone's going to retire as well. The face of that era of French tennis that did a lot of extraordinary things. So I'm sad to see him go. But he had a heck of a career. One of the best of his era for sure.
I mean, I think that's a great perspective to have. What Ferrer said is they made me a better player, because you know that's in a lot of people's goals is to be able to win a Grand Slam. And there were so many guys, there are so many guys that are talented enough to do it. And yes, the big three and four, if you include Andy Murray, got in the way. Mm. And that to me is what's impressive, that Wawrinka was able to get a few. Chilich was able to get one. Medvedev was able to get one. I mean, it's been really impressive from those guys, because there's so many, I think, that could have had chances to have slams. And I think not only did the big three make everyone else a better player, I think they made each other better players. I think the fact that they stayed at the top for so long have pushed each other further and further and further. And that's almost why I feel like they've been able, all three of them, to stay at the top for so long.
Nobody has a bad thing to say about him either.
I'm going to miss Tsonga.
And we all are. Everything. The smile, the dance, the game. It's great. Jill, this was fun. What matches should we look forward to tomorrow and the weekend? Because I know I got Korda Alcaraz on my brain.
I love Korda. He's one of my favorite. And I love Alcaraz.
Last guy to beat Alcaraz.
Why did they have to play each other?
Last guy to beat him.
This is what's sad, is these the players that I love have to play each other. I mean, I should say I love everybody, but okay, wait, I'm trying to find the schedule.
That's a good one.
Alcaraz would be insane. I actually hope I get to do that match tomorrow.
On the women's side, I'm looking at, we mentioned Coco Kanepi. That's fun. Belinda Bencic, Leyla Fernandez. That's
Anna
fun.
Anna Samova Mukova is going to be
okay.
Hey, we did good.
And Angelique Kerber just keeps fighting. I mean, her draw's opening up. It's like, you know, it's like the heavyweight champ that's past her prime, but still has that fighting spirit down there.
Well, there's a lot of good matches tomorrow.
There's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a good weekend for sure of tennis. Daniil Medvedev still in this draw, plays Kecmanovic on Saturday. There's some good stuff. I mean, I think we're going to start to see, as we get to the fourth round and on, that there'll still be these upsets. I don't think we should be just writing in pen what the draw, what the matchups are going to look like.
Oh, I'm going to put you on the spot right now and say who the upset's going to be.
Who gets upset?
This is exciting, though.
I know it is. Zverev plays Nakashima in the third round.
That would be interesting.
Upset, but I think Brandon Nakashima's game. He took him 5 at the U.S. Open a few years ago. He's somebody that I think could win. Filip Krajinovic against Felix. I'm going to be monitoring that one as well.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
We'll have to see. On the women's side, you mentioned like the Kaya Kanepi, Coco. Like, I was pumping up Coco, but that's not, like, I don't even know that I would almost consider that an upset.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes I look at these matchups and I don't necessarily, I mean, just because of the ranking, I don't necessarily feel like it's.
Oh, exactly.
An upset. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's some good ones for sure. I think Keys Rybakina, I want to end on that because I think that's one where you're right. Like anything could happen in that one. But Jill, thanks so much for joining the show. It's been fun listening to you call matches here at the studio with the rest of us. And thank you so much for coming on Tennis Channel Inside In.
My pleasure, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
That was Jill Kravis on Tennis Channel Inside In. We're on the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Go to tennis.com/podcasts. We have the entire catalog of shows up there. We will be back next week for more of Tennis Channel Inside In. It's the road to Roland Garros. We are here. We're going to get to the latter stages. It's going to be a fun recap for sure. For Jill Kravis, I'm Mitch Michaels. This was Tennis Channel Inside In. See you next week.